Thanks, Alvaro. Thanks for inviting me here. And so indeed, I will speak about this title, so Driven Quantum Dynamics, So Will It Blend? So let me give you, an idea so what this title means, because so we have a setting like this. So we are interested in a quantum many-body system, and here in this picture I've just considered, for instance, as an optical lattice. And so this system has an internal dynamics, so an internal Hamiltonian, like for instance a Hubbard model, or in other case a spin system. So some many-body Hamiltonian. And on top of that Hamiltonian, we are also driving the quantum system. So we are applying pulses in order to modify the behavior of that many-body system and make something interesting, for instance, for quantum information processing. So that's the setting normally of quantum control. But here I'm going to consider a different point of view. So what's going to happen when, instead of fixing the control pulses to obtain some particular dynamics, we consider random pulses on the system? Okay. So now, let me clarify also what this means. So if we apply many random pulses and at the end we look at what happened to the system, then normally this will thermalize or will go to some very highly mixed state. But here I'm considering the other setting. So I'm considering a single pulse and see what happens to the system. Then I consider another pulse and see what happens to the system and look at the distribution of this unitary matrix that we get.
So these pulses are chosen independently from each other?
I'll come to that in a moment. So this was like a picture, but let's make things more formal. So we have a driven driven system. Namely, we have an internal Hamiltonian, like a Heisenberg Hamiltonian or Hubbard, and then we have we are applying pulses like magnetic fields, and this V is an operator, and SG is just the function describing the pulse. So for each choice of the pulse, we can solve the Schrödinger equation and write the unitary evolution resulting for a single choice of the pulse. So the question of this talk is actually what happens when we are applying random pulses. And I will define also what I mean random pulses in a moment. And so what we will show is that under some conditions, so the distribution of unitaries that we get from selecting a different distribution of pulses, so after some time will converge to a uniform distribution over the unitaries, namely the hard distribution over the unitary. And in order to see also for how long we have to drive the system with random pulses in order to be close enough to a hard distribution, I will study this what we call the blending time. And in order to have an estimation of the blending time, we will mix some tools from the theory of open quantum systems and many-body techniques, in particular the Bethe-Ansatz technique.
Actually, it's fully hard, it's not just some K-design.
It's a K-design, yes. Technically, it's a K-design. All right, so first of all, let me give you also some motivation, so why this is interesting. And so there are random unitaries, and particularly hard random unitaries, are used a lot in quantum information theory protocols. In particular, they are used in quantum encryption, like in the one-time path, which is in cryptography. And they are used also in state tomography. And in state tomography, we use what is technically called a T-design. But then also we have a paper in preparation where we show that we can also do optical tomography using two N designs, where N here is the number of photons. And this paper will appear in a few days on the archive. Then another reason to study hard random matrices is for noise estimation in open quantum systems. So basically, we are, by averaging over many unitaries, we can somehow average out the coherent evolution of the system and get then an estimation of the decoherence. And ultimately, another application is for generating highly entangled state. And in particular, I've worked a lot in this in the generation of highly entangled states with a different platform. And indeed, we have also an experimental collaboration where we have observed a quantum walk in a photonic platform, and we somehow used this quantum simulator to simulate the dynamics of an XY spin chain and optimize the dynamics of a spin chain to get a highly entangled state. So here is this is a Bell state. So it's a maximally entangled state between faraway particles. But a state with a similar amount of entanglement, so with volume low entanglement, namely with an entanglement which is proportional to the size of the subsystem, can be obtained also with Haar random matrices. Then another application, which is more for quantum control problems, which is what we are interested in now, is for estimation of the control time. So in quantum control, the problem is normally, so I give you a unitary, and I want to obtain that unitary after some pulses. For how long do I, so what are these pulses to achieve that unitary? But normally the people don't know how to estimate for how long you have to apply a pulse to the system. And if we get an estimation of the blending time, so this mixing time, it means that at that time, all unitaries are achievable because we are obtaining a uniform distribution over the unitaries. So the blending time is also an estimation of the control time. And another application which is close is for the problem of boson sampling. So in boson sampling experiments, we need Haar random operations in order to for the experiment to simulate a complicated problem. But Haar random operations in current experiments are done by something like this. So this is a big interferometer. And so the light is coming from here and is led to interfere. So what they do is they normally apply random beam splitters and phase shifters. And with that, you obtain a random distribution at the output. So what you are saying here is that we can obtain the same distribution in a much simpler way, just by coupled waveguides, like a one-dimensional quantum walk, but with some noise with some phase noise in the quantum walk. So it would be much interesting, well, much easier. I've shown you that there are several reasons to study Haar random matrices in many body systems. So how do we study our problem? So let me give you a geometric picture. So we have the space of all the unitaries, and that space is like a compact set, so it's like a ball. So if we fix a particular pulse, then we get a specific unitary, which is just a point in this space. So if we repeat now the same thing, so we apply many pulses, then we will get many unitaries, so many points in this space. But the question is that, do these points cluster? So do they just populate a subpart of this space, or do they cover the entire space and in a uniform way? So like this. So that's the question. So how do we model this? So how do we define this problem? So we use tools from quantum information theory. The way to define this problem is, for instance, you can start from a specific quantum state rho, apply a unitary obtained for a specific pulse, and then calculate the average over the unitary. So here, by EU, I mean the averages of the unitaries that can be obtained via this pulses. So I compare the distance between this quantity here and the quantity obtained by a formal average over the Haar group, and I want that to be small. So this is not actually the most general thing you can do, because of course you can repeat the experiment many times. So using many copies, so here it is Q copies of the system. And not only you can repeat the experiment many times, but you can also do something more complicated. So you can build, let's say, a larger system in an entangled state and apply many independent copies of the same unitary to this space and calculate what is the distance between the average that you get in this way and the formal average over the group. So in the quantum information literature, depending on the norm that you choose, so these have different names. So in particular, when we use the Diamond norm here, which is somehow the worst case scenario. So it's like the so the diamond node, if this quantity is smaller than epsilon, it means that no single global measurement can distinguish between this random process and this other random process with a probability larger than epsilon. But this norm here is quite complicated to calculate. So we need also to use something which is a bit easier. And these are called the expanders. So the expanders, what we normally do is that we map this complicated superoperator into an operator. Okay? So namely that, so this is called the vectorization. So namely that if you have any operator, which you can expand into a basis, then from this operator you can define a vector like a cat just by taking this this bra here and putting it into a cat. So we map operators into some Hilbert space, but we double the Hilbert space and we are able to transform operators into vectors. And in this case, then the superoperators in the vectorization space, they become operators. And in particular, if an operator acts on the right, then it's like A tensor identity. If it acts on the left, then it is identity tensor A transpose. So this quantity here, which we call U tensor QQ, is U tensor copy of Q tensor the same thing but for complex conjugate. Okay? So we can map this superoperator here then into the distance of these operators. And here normally the people choose the infinite norm and random unitaries which satisfy this constraint are called expanders in the quantum information literature. So this definition may seem a bit abstract, so let me also clarify a bit more what does it mean in more physical terms. So first of all, it's like polynomial of a matrix. So it's like we are trying to compare probability distributions by looking at the moments of the probability distribution. So it's like comparing distributions by looking at the moments. And indeed, there is a result by Brandao and others who study the Wasserstein distance between the distributions, which is a distance between probability measures. And they have shown that if these two probability measures are close enough, then even these moments are close enough. Right. But in a more physical term, so for instance, in this boson sampling experiments, where I remind, so we inject a certain number of photons in an interferometer, and then we study the distribution at the outputs. And this distribution at the output depends on the permanent of the unitary matrix describing the interferometer. And so if we have basically Q photons, then this permanent can be written in this way with some complicated contraction element. But the point is that if you want to study boson sampling with Q photons, and you want a unitary matrix which is distributed according to the Haar measure, then you have to look at the problem with the Qth moment. So look at the Q design. Another application is like in spin chains, like for instance XY spin chains. And in that case, you can also study the correlation function between site I and site I plus Q at time t. And you can write, because the XY spin chains has free fermions, you can also decompose this into products of unitary matrices, single particle unitary matrices. And again, you obtain this quantity here. So in a spin chain setting, if you want to study the convergence of the correlation functions, distant correlation functions, you have to look at the Qth moment, what Q is the distance between the spins.
What is the K matrix that you're
obtaining? It's a complicated contraction matrix, which is basically the Wick theorem. So you expand. So these quantities here are just depends on on either creation or annihilation operator in the fermionic language, and then you have a string of operators between I and I plus Q. And so each of them gets a unitary matrix, and so you get this this tensor copies of U. And this guy here takes into account all the contractions that you have to do to get the final result. Okay, and then also another application, if you study, let's say, scrambling, information scrambling, so normally people look at the entanglement of the random dynamics, and they study the Reni entropy. So the Reni entropy is defined in this way. So you have a trace of the state to the power of Q. But this trace to the state to the power of Q, you can write it as a Q copies times a permutation operator. So even if you want to study the Reni entropy, the Qth Reni entropy, you have to you have again to look at the Qth moment of the distribution. Okay. So this is like these are all motivations and definitions to why to study this problem. So let me show you what are our results. So first of all, let me clarify what we mean with the stochastic driving of the system. So again, so this is what I wrote before. So we have a Hamiltonian, time-dependent Hamiltonian. We have the Hamiltonian of the system and the pulses. So by random pulse, what I mean a random pulse, I mean something like this. So we can expand a time-dependent function into the Fourier components. And so basically we get a random function by taking random amplitudes, random phases, well, in principle, even random frequencies. So that's how we get we define these random functions. And then we have to study this quantity here. So we solve the Schrödinger equation. We take Q copies of that solution, and we study the average over those unitaries. Now you see that this quantity here is very complicated. And so we have to make some assumptions in order to go beyond and do some obtain some results. So this question can be simplified when G, so the random process, satisfies these three constraints. So the first is that the random process is Gaussian. And this is actually a very good approximation when K is a very large number because of the central limit theorem.
The Gaussian things are the AKs and the omega Ks and so on?
It's just the time-dependent process. It's a Gaussian stochastic process. But since it is a Gaussian stochastic process, you can describe everything by, let's say, two-point correlation functions and over the process. And this, so we have, the other assumption is that this is harmonic, namely basically time invariant. So the correlation function of time t plus s and time t depends only on s and not on t. Okay? And then the third approximation, which is the one which actually helps to simplify the whole process, is that we assume short correlations. So basically delta correlated noise. So somehow a white noise. And this is a good approximation when basically we are interested in a time which is much longer compared to the time scales of the noise. Okay? So under these three approximations, then we can simplify the problem a lot. Because in that case, we have that this complicated time-dependent average can be written in terms of an exponential of a super operator, which is a Liouville super operator. So t here is the time, the maximal time where we are driving the system. And this LQ is a super operator, which is written in the Lindblad form. So it takes this expression here. So here we have, again, Q copies of the same Hamiltonian and the same noise parameter. But because of this average, we see that these copies are interacting. So here we have a kind of a nonlinear term, which depends on this product. So again, going back to the cartoon picture, we have our system. We are applying random pulses to the copies. But because of these copies, they all feel the same noise. When we do the average over the noise, then what we get is that basically all these copies are interacting. So it's somehow what happens with the replica trick in the spin glass theory. So you start with independent things, but then when you do the averages, you get some interactions between these copies. And this is the picture shown for q equal to 4, where this interaction here is due to this term here. So it's a dissipative interaction. Okay. All right. So given this simplification, then we can show the first result. And so the first important result of our paper is that if this time-dependent system is corresponds to a fully controllable problem, then basically in the limit of driving the system for an infinite amount of time, then this is exactly equal to the average over the hard distribution, or in other terms. So under our assumptions, if you drive the system with a random function for an infinite amount of time, the distribution of unitaries that you will get are distributed according to the hard distribution. And in other terms, yeah, that we cover the entire space. So the proof is not that complicated. It's based on the definition of controllability. Namely, controllability is a Lie algebra requirement. Namely, that if you take H, V, and all the commutators, and you repeat this procedure, then what you get is the entire Lie algebra of the space. And another part of this proof is basically the Schur-Weyl duality. Namely, that you can decompose the tensor products of a problem into representations of the unitary group and representations of the permutation group. But because this part is saturated by the controllability requirement, then basically this average is just a combination of permutation operator, and then we exactly calculate this the coefficients of these permutation operators, and we can equate all these things and find this result. But yes, so that's the central result, but it's not very useful in terms of the time. So for how long do we have to drive the system to be close enough to this? Of course, we cannot drive the system for an infinite amount of time. So for how long do we have to drive the system to be close enough to the expected distribution of the hard average?
Side question. Purely controllable means that you keep on going here. You have an infinite series of commutators, right?
Fully controllable is this thing here. So it means that if you take H, you take V, then you take the first commutator, you obtain a new operator. And you want that to be different, so not in the algebra. So then you do this again, so you obtain new operators. And if you do that multiple times, you basically recover the whole space of the whole basis of the Lie algebra.
Is there any special case where you can stop at a finite time, at a finite number of adjoints, commutators over there?
When H and V are finite, you can do that. When H and yes.
But in general, you need to put them all.
For an infinite system, yes. But there are other, let's say, conditions for controllability which avoid this calculation of the entire algebra. They use some tricks for representation theory.
So, for example, in 2D, if you take poly X and poly Y, or poly Z, sorry, this will...
Yeah, can be, for instance, for a qubit, you can take Pauli X and Pauli Z, and taking commutative, you get Pauli with Pauli Y as well, and so forth.
For term.
Yeah. Okay. So this approach of using the Liouvillean operator helps also to calculate what is the convergence time, or in other terms, the mixing time. And this can be studied by using the gap of this Liouvillean operator. And indeed, the distance between this quantity here and basically the infinite time limit can be bounded by an exponential decay where this L star is the Liouvillean gap. So it's namely is the eigenvalue of minus LQ with the minimal non-zero real part. So that's what we call the Liouvillian gap. So we have to study this gap in order to have an estimate of for how long we have to drive the system. But how can we estimate lambda star? Because remember that for us, H and V are many-body Hamiltonians. But we have to take Q copies of these Hamiltonians. And because of this average over the noise, all of these copies are interacting. So we have a huge Hilbert space. So there is no chance to do numerics, even for smaller systems. So we have to make some assumptions here or study some solvable cases. So in order to do that, so we will use so we will use a second quantized notation. So we will use a second quantized formalism. So when we have these copies, these Q copies, so we can write all of these terms into the superoperator using creation annihilation operator. So remember that we have a Liouvillian operator, a Liouvillian superoperator. But using the vectorization formalism, we can transform a superoperator into an operator. And that's, once you do that, the Liouvillian becomes this matrix here. Okay? And oops. And then we take Q copies of this matrix H, and we use the second quantized notation. So in the second quantized notation, so we take the single particle Hamiltonian, Hamiltonian, and then we use creation and annihilation operator to model all these copies. Okay?
Can I ask a baby?
Yes?
When you wrote the Limbler form before, you had a commutator and then you had just two commutators in the dissipation part.
Yes, two commutators.
Is that always the case that you can do that with two commutators, or in general you have...
In general, in the Lindblad case, it's the most general Lindblad master equation is a bit more complicated. So it cannot be written always in this double commutator formalism. Because this V can be also jump operators, so can be non-Hermitian. And in that case, you have something which is a bit more complicated in the expression. But when the V are Hermitian, you can always, yes, in that case, you can always write that as a...
Are there any cases where you have three commutators? Or the sum of the two and the three?
And not three commutator here, but if you have, let's say, different independent noises, then you might have not only a single V, you have many V, and then you have a sum of those many Vs. But you see that here there is an operator acting on the left and commutator, so then minus the one acting on the right. So in the vectorization formalism, you get that, so we have this tensor identity minus the same thing, identity tensor that. And then this is the dissipative part. So then we use the second quantized notation, and it turns out that not only the symmetric subspace, but any subspace of these copies can be studied with the second quantized notation using another index. But this is a technical point, so this I won't discuss much about this. But the point is that now we use another trick just to write this Liouvillian into a Hamiltonian which is more familiar. So we say that, so remember that we have two copies in the Liouvillian coming out from the vectorization. So we say that if something acts here on the first copy, then it has a spin up. If it's acting on the second copy, then we say that it has spin down. Okay, so it's just an index. So we call up if it is here, down if it is there. So once we do that, we can write in the second quantized notation this Liouvillian operator into something which looks like a Hubbard model, but where the coupling Hamiltonian, sorry, the Hopping term is imaginary. Okay. So we have this kind of generalization of the Hubbard model. And you see that here everything is still quite complicated, but because since we have written in this way, we have already learned something. So you see that this model is interacting, but all the copies are in, so every copy is interacting with all the others. So, and we know from condensed matter that when that is the case, normally the mean field approach is a very good approximation. So the first thing that we tried is that, okay, so let's try the mean field approximation and let's see what we get. So with the mean field approximation, we found that this gap is independent on Q. Okay? And this is a very powerful result because it means that if we are studying the convergence of the distribution of random matrices to the hard distribution, and we are looking at the moments, this Qth moment, then all the moments converge somehow at the same time. So we can estimate this time only for the single copy where there aren't this large Hilbert space, and that will provide a very good approximation to the mixing time, provided that the mean field approach works. Okay? And we found before with some small-scale numerical experiments that this approximation is normally very good, but we found also some counterexamples. And these counterexamples can be, because of everything interacting with everybody. So we found some counterexamples, and these counterexamples, which are not common, so they are rare, but this can be explained via symmetry breaking in tensor powers. But we weren't completely satisfied with the mean field approach, because we cannot control the validity of the mean field approach rather than knowing that it should work because everything is interacting with everything. So because of that, we studied an exactly solvable model. So we considered a one-dimensional quantum walk. So we have a chain of particles. So each particle is interacting with the next nearest neighbor, like in a one-dimensional quantum walk. And what we are doing is that we are applying a random driving on the first side. And the reason why we are doing that is because we know that this is enough for obtaining a fully controllable system. Namely that even if you apply a pulse on the first side of a chain, you can obtain any unitary. Okay? In that case, what we obtain is a model like this, which is a Hubbard model with nearest neighbor hopping and then a non-site interaction. So this model is again not solvable because in our case, so we have to make some approximations. And one approximation that we made is like the strong driving limit. So in the strong driving limit, so namely that when the strong driving means strong noise, so when the noise is very strong. So what we found is that the Liouvillean in that case can be mapped into a model which is exactly solvable by Bethe ansatz, namely what is called the Richardson-Gaudin model. So the Richardson-Gaudin model is the original Gaudin model is a spin star model. So you have a central spin, which is interacting with all the other spins in a kind of star-like graph. So here we don't have a spin Gaudin model because we find a SU11 Richardson-Gaudin model. But even that model is exactly solvable by Bethe ansatz using the same tricks. And since it's exactly solvable by Bethe ansatz, we were able to write the spectrum in terms of some numbers and then some quantities which are the rapidities. And the rapidities are the solution of the beta equations, which are some complicated nonlinear equations. So it seems that we have shifted the problem because so we weren't able to do the calculations before because of the size. Now we map the problem into the Bethe ansatz, but still we cannot solve these Bethe equations exactly, right? But now there is a trick, because this particular Bethe equations can be, the solutions to the Bethe equations can be related to the roots of the Hein-Stieltjes polynomials. And there is a well-developed theories of the Hein-Stieltjes polynomials, and we know that the zeros of those polynomials, they are bounded in a certain interval. Okay, and because of that, we are able to say that, okay, so if you want to study the gap, you can neglect the whole of this part. So in other terms, that in the gap, you never have bound particles. So the gap is made by unpaired particles. And because of that, we were able to show exactly this, to find exactly this gap. And again, we find that the gap is independent on the number of copies. So we find exactly the predictions of the mean field approach. But here we have an exactly solvable model, and we see exactly why these things are happening. Because basically we are saying that, okay, there may be bounded particles, but these don't play a role. So the gap is made by these quasi-particle solutions, by unpaired particles. All right, so this was done by studying the fully symmetric case. So when you have when your copies are like in the fully symmetric representation, we can also study what happens when the copies are in an anti-symmetric configuration. In that case, everything goes back to the standard Gaudin model, so the central spin model. And so even in that case, we can find the gap even in that case. In the general case, for a generic representation of the symmetric group, then things get much more complicated. Because in that case, we still obtain a Gaudin model, but it's a Gaudin model for the group SU2Q. But even in that case, the Gaudin model is exactly solvable. And indeed, we could solve the problem, find the Bethe equations. But in this time, the Bethe equations are not related to the roots to the Heinz tilted polynomials. So we had to make some use some kind of electrostatic analogy. And indeed, in the electrostatic analogy, the solution of those equations are like the solution of an electrostatic problem with this potential here. But you see that this potential is unbounded in this in the two parts of the spectrum. So it means that no solutions can be found here. And that's because of physical reasons. So using that, we again find that the gap, we can plug that and obtain that basically, even in this case, bounded particles do not play any role. And so we find that the gap is independent of Q.
So this is what you get when you want to impose that these HMV are generated whole algebra,
This is what we find when we want to find the gap of the Liouvillean. So when we want to find the eigenvalue of the Liouvillean with the smallest real part.
Sure, and there's no condition in the Liouvillean.
We started with a particular Liouvillean.
Sure.
So we started with an exactly solvable. All these things are for an exactly solvable model, which is this one. So namely, a Hopping a one-dimensional quantum walk with some noise on the first side. Yes. So this is a particular choice.
You distinguish Heinz tildes, of which I remember very little, mm-hmm. from electrostatic models. I thought they were also in the Heinz tildes case. Don't you have electrostatic model?
I'm not sure about that. But the nice thing is that
there has both things in the title, so there must be.
There must be.
It doesn't prove anything.
Yeah, because actually the complicated generic case, the one with this S2Q, actually reduces to the fully symmetric case in a specifically subcase. So in other terms, so the Heinz tilting polynomial is a particular case of this picture here, and so they should be related.
So
yeah.
You take n electrons, you split one of them in half, you tie them at the end of the interval, and you let the other ones move whatever you want with inverse some law, I forget which one, and the zeros the equilibrium position are the zeros of the Legendre polynomial. I thought that was the simplest case of Heinz-Tildes. Maybe I'm confused.
I don't know about that, but I think
what
they are definitely...
Just for you, what do you call the Heinz-Tildes?
It's just when you have some... you can define these polynomials by recurrence relations. And now actually I don't remember the recurrence relations for the Heinz-Tilted polynomials, but that's how you define them. Okay, so the final message is that, okay, we can find the gap, and this gap is independent on the number of copies, so that is a good estimate of the mixing time. But you have seen that we have done many steps here. So we have done some approximation, and then we used Bethe ansatz, and then polynomials. So have we lost something, right, in all these steps? So we did also some numerical simulations, and you see that these are the exact gap that we can find from the numerical simulation. This is the prediction for the weak driving limit, which can be obtained exactly. This is the prediction for the strong driving limit, which is again obtained exactly. And we find that our predictions are very well approximated in the limit where they should work, so, namely for strong, for weak noise or strong noise. Okay, so let's put all of these things together and let's see what we have done and what we have learned. So what are the conditions? So first of all, if we want to obtain this hard random matrices, we need a fully controllable system, namely that the Lie algebra generated by the Hamiltonian, the controlling operator, is the full Lie algebra. Then we found that all the moments of the distribution of these matrices converge at the same time. Okay, and then we find that we can estimate this time using this theory, this open quantum system theory and second quantizer notation. So let's see then what we have then. So let's see some numerical experiments now to see what we have predicted. So now we go back, so we don't consider now any more white noise, so we do something more like a really random function. So we expand this with different frequencies and we take random amplitudes and random phases and random frequencies as well. So what then in this all these 3D plots, what we plot is basically so we do the following. So we take a unitary, we decompose the unitaries into the Euler angles, and we normalize these Euler angles such that the hard distribution is basically a uniform distribution over this angle. This can be done. So then what we do is that for each angle, we divide the angle into time bins. And so basically, this is like the histogram that we get for each angle. So each line here is an angle, and each line in the other part is like a bin, so that what we have divided the angles. So we study a unitary for different choices of this function, and we count the number of times that the angle goes into that bin. So you see that. So here we have considered the non-controllable case, so where this H and V do not generate the full Lie algebra. And you see that the distribution of unitaries that we get is far from this uniform. So it's very clustered. So we have, for instance, that this angle here is very likely to be in some specific values, not just uniform. So this do not converge to the hard. Again, we consider the controllable case, but where the time is quite small, is quite short. And again, you can see that this distribution is not flat. But then we calculated the mixing time, and we studied the problem at, for instance, twice the mixing time. And you see that in that case, we have a very good approximation of a flat distribution. So here now, everything is flat. So this somehow confirms the prediction of our theory. Okay, so with this, I can go to the conclusion. So what we have done? So we have studied when and how rapidly a quantum system subject to dynamical noise produces a fully random, namely hard uniform distribution of unitary evolutions. And in order to study this question, which seems quite simple, but we have to use different tools from, for instance, tools from quantum information like quantum control and the theory of Q designs. Then we use the theory of open quantum systems, so dynamical semi-groups, low energy Liouvillians. And then we use techniques from condensed matter physics like Bethe-Ansatz, such as mean field and the replica trick. And so applications for this are in, for instance, boson sampling experiments or the estimation of the control time or even, for instance, for the entanglement generation in many body sets. So, and you can find all the details and much more in our paper, which is written in this reference here. So let me just conclude with a picture. So just to answer the question, yes, it blends. Uh-huh. With this, I conclude.
depends on Q, which it doesn't, I guess. But how does it depend on the dimension of the system?
That depends on the model. For instance, the model that the model that we considered here is actually one of the simplest models. But you see that here we are applying noise just on a side. So this noise somehow has to go to propagate all over the chain, go back and forth many times before randomizing everything. So because of that, somehow the gap scales like L, which is the length of the chain, to the minus 3.
That's related to the dimension how?
L is the dimension, so it is the length of the chain. As is the length of the chain. Now, if you do, I think we haven't mentioned that in the paper, but we have studied also another case. So where instead of applying the noise here, you apply the noise everywhere. And in that case, we haven't done all the theory, but the numerical results show basically that we get L to the minus 2. So we get an improvement in that case. But this is a very model dependent.
So these highness stealiness polynomials appear naturally in the problem?
Yeah, they are. I think they are already in the first paper by Godin. Maybe not in the, I'm not sure about the first, but actually I found this relation already in his papers. And so they were introduced by Godin himself to study the solution of the Bethe equation.
Okay, so this is thank you.
Okay, thank you.